Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm an SLP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. That's over at twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. That's where you'll find the chat room. You'll find our lovely co-broadcast, because I do also broadcast on TalkShoe, but not many people show up there. But the chat room, the place that's active, is over on Twitch. So twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you will find us there. And you'll be able to join us in that wonderful chat room. And see my beautiful face. Okay, my face, as ugly as it is. Okay, and of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. And also, you want to follow me on Twitter, you also can follow me at sfuoncall. Wow. And of course, also my personal account that I use for overall goofing around. Don't do that many posts, to be honest, but that's going to be Paul Franz, P-A-U-L-F-R-A-N-Z. That's a reminder that I love being Catholic, I love my O's, and I love technology. So if any of those bother you, if I happen to retweet or tweet about it, don't follow me. Just personal warning. Of course, if you want to follow me also on Franz Games, that's where you want to find out what's going on with Starfleet Warlord, you know, when's the latest next game going to be starting, or SFB Online, you'll see the latest clients, any tournaments that can be running, things like that will be there, and also of course FedCom Online too. And of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned up podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week, and that is the Megahex H1, the 1-inch counters module, because of rising costs, because they keep going up and up and up, ADB can't afford to sell them at the local stores anymore, because of course they're going to want to charge. It's either the prices have to go up, or he can't sell them at the retail stores because of, he can't take the cost cut, because, you know, basically he'd be selling them to the retailers for under cost, and you can't keep doing that when you want to stay in business. So to stay in business, he's actually just going to sell them directly from ADB, so that you know, he won't be selling them at a loss. And of course, another one is, there's an early bird edition of the Federation and Empire Strategic Operations 2022 rulebook. It's available on PDF, and it's available all the normal e-tellers, you know, the Warehouse 23, the War Game Vault, and of course DriveThru RPG. Go there if you want to get an early bird edition. Obviously, this will let you know that if there's any errors in it, ADB will be happy to, they will post up an updated version of the PDF, so you can download that again to get the updates, because there might have been some corrections that were needed before the final version was shipped out. Moving onward to SFB Online. When it comes to the tournament, still no tournament starting up yet. That's from also, well, that's a little, when it comes to online client stuff, there is a YouTube channel called SFU Online Client Channel. Just search for SFU Online Client. The actual URL, I don't have enough followers. You have to be around for so much time, and also you have to have, or you have to have like 1,000 followers. I don't have that many, so I can't customize my URL. So, onward and forward. Not much else happening there at the moment. Also, when it comes to libraries, no progress there at the moment. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one old Paul Franz, welcoming you to Star for the Universe On Call. And tonight, well, we've got Doug. Hey, Doug.
Hello.
And we have Gary.
Hi.
Hey, Gary.
Hello.
How y'all doing? That's oh. You're alive. That's a good thing. You know, I don't need you in the hospital again. That,
funny you should mention that, but yes.
Come on, the last time I saw you in real life, we were talking in the hospital.
Yeah. Yep. That was Gamers of Winter.
Yes,
I recall.
Yes, it was. And I remember the
Mr.
snow.
Mr. Goldblatter said, hey, I'm going to be super annoying. It's time for me to go.
Yep.
What better time than a couple days before the Gamers of Winter event?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember the drive back from that, too. Because it started to snow. And since the hospital was far enough away from any of the major roads, you know, it went through, you had to go through this neighborhood, and it was absolutely no salt laid down, nothing. So I'm laying on this little, I'm driving on this, this little dusting of snow, terrified that I'm just going to slide off the side of the road, because I'm not sure what the road is actually like. And then I get on the highway. It's like, okay, I get back to Game of the Winter. Stayed there for just a tiny bit of time and went, okay, I'm leaving now because I want to get home before it really starts to get dark. Because if it's when it starts to get dark and it snows, it's not like other times when it gets slippery and so forth. You can't see squat. So if let's say, a deer, which has where the roads I travel to get home, they have attended. I've not seen any deer since all the travels I've done. Actually, I've seen very few. I can't say I haven't seen any. But, that's not something you want to take a chance of, because if the deer comes out, and you can't really hit the brakes very hard because of, and of course, a deer's a deer. It's a heavy creature. So you can just mess up your whole front end of your car that way real fast. So I had to leave a little early.
And I'll forget all the nice hills to drive through here.
Yeah, I was glad I got home safely in one piece, you know. So.
Yeah, that's the only downside to the wintertime convention setup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but overall.
Sometimes the weather is like.
Yeah. Oh, agreed. It's those rare that we actually ran into that. You know.
Maybe 3 or 4 times out of like 14 years,
mm-hmm.
we've had bad weather.
Yeah.
And I think I remember all of them. Because of having to drive through it to get to the event.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So that one was the last one we had at the long time venue of the Pennsylvania Fire Hall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, the funny thing is, where did I see those? I forget if I saw it on Facebook or I saw it on one in my photos app. On my iPhone, I forget which. Oh no, it would have been photos app on my iPad. One of those two, I forget which. But it was basically one of the early gamers. I don't remember if it's winter or summer, but it was one of the larger ones where we actually had someone come out that was remember the guy who I think drove down from like New York. And, sold, like, his books. He was an author.
Oh, yes.
That was
he passed away a few years.
Yeah, I've...
Yes.
Yeah, those pictures of that one. I think it was the first one.
Was that at the Moose? When we were at the Moose Lodge? Up in Marysville?
Mm-hmm. I think... I think so. It was one of the.
He was with us for quite an event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if I remember correctly, he basically penciled us in because We were kind of like in between different events that he was driving to as well.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of convenient to his schedule
mm-hmm.
quite a bit. Oh, good Lord, I can't think of the man's name off the top of my head.
I
He's
can't.
Like a self-published author. He did.
Yes.
His main thing was like he would run a Call of Cthulhu game
mm-hmm.
along with that. Let's see. I keep thinking CJ, but that's different author on my friends list.
Yeah. I can't remember the guy's name. I remember buying...
I have his fake. He actually secured the rights to use Kolchak the Night Stalker as a character. Remember
oh,
that
wow.
show from the 70s?
No, I don't remember that show from the 70s.
Yeah, he integrated that with the Call of Cthulhu, the Lovecraft universe.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, that's so many memories from so long ago. I remember sitting there listening to him and then talked to, he had some of his fans were part of the, were people that had come to our event prior to him coming out to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure, his name's going to come to me in a minute or
two. Yeah. That
or it'll come to me like 5 after we're done talking. Weird how that works.
Yeah. Agreed.
But yeah, we had some good common ground. He was a poker player too.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things.
Which one is...
Yeah. We have gamers of winners going to be. Oh, are you going to be able to make it Sunday? I forgot to ask you before we started.
I have to double check.
For the Harrisburg game day?
Right.
Okay. It runs from noon to 8.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be there the entire 8 hours.
Yeah, I definitely could not be there for the whole 8 hours.
But maybe we could get some demos in.
Mm-hmm.
I said they get like 100 to 150 people.
Wow.
Which is interesting considering that they're doing it on Labor Day weekend.
Agreed.
CJ Henderson, that was the guy's name. I was right, it was CJ.
Uh-huh.
It's just different CJ somewhere. CJ Henderson, that was... And it's like, yeah, I remember when he passed away, like maybe 5-6 years ago. It's been a while.
Wow.
Goodness.
Oh, okay, that's what
the state, I think, runs.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of the old ones from like Grantville, including one where remember the guy who actually did some singing? Do I have?
Yes. like Celebrity Night here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just did a we did a short video shoot a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't put any of the footage out. I'm not sure if I'm going to, but the purpose of that shot was to was just for me to get a little editing experience so I can start looking at maybe doing some project in the near future.
Right, right.
I mean, the brown shirt guy. the pirate. The guy that did the Firefly cosplay.
Right.
Is that who you mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's right.
Because he did that out of Grantville. He also did it at Paxtonia. Oh, goodness. Wait. Yeah? Are you going through... Are you sharing any of those photos?
Not at the moment. I'm
like, with our...
I was looking for the ones that I saw, and I don't see them at the moment, so I might just stop looking and just give up. Yeah, I'm full. I'm looking at some of the pictures of my house that they... when they ripped it apart. I had a fire, so.
Yeah. Nathan Maker, that was his name. Nathan, yeah. Because that's something that we didn't really have much of in the past. I mean, we had a little bit of cosplay, but wasn't really a big part of the event.
Oh, agreed, agreed.
Most of the people came there and they got into their gaming, and that's pretty much that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed, agreed. Yeah, every once in a while you have someone who decides to dress up and do a little bit of cosplay.
Well, the few times I said, hey, let's try and have like a contest. There's maybe three or four people that would show up or something like that.
Yeah, most of the contests were baking contests.
Well, dessert contests, yeah.
Yeah.
But even that, you know, it's just there wasn't the interest in that part of it after quite some time.
Right. Oh, agreed. Agreed.
But, I mean, the main thing at the Gamers Winter and Gamers of Summer is really the game.
Hmm. Agreed. Oh, agreed. Agreed. 100% there.
Speaking of which, I can get my shameless plug out of the way early if you want me to.
Oh, by all means.
Yeah, we still have the me. We're still looking for a venue. Basically, we got a few more bucks added to it, and I'd say it's looking up a little bit. We could always use more bucks thrown towards it. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is, if you're one of our regular attendees and you want to throw money at it, it is counting towards any attendance. And if you want to throw a little extra to help make sure that we can find a new space, that's awesome. But basically, the space we were using for the last several, maybe, what, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years? It's been a while. We were there for a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They decided to no longer rent to outside agencies, and they were going to repurpose their space to another purpose. Into a combination gym and training room instead of public rental space, the firehouse.
Yeah.
Which, on a fiscal basis, makes no sense whatsoever because it's a cash cow for them. But that's what they decided to do, and we just have to find a new place.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
The downside of all that is, most of the places that we've been to in the past have gone way up in price. So it just makes it a bit challenging.
Agreed.
I mean,
agreed.
On Sunday, we're going to be at the Whitaker Center with Harrisburg Game Day people. And I'm not sure that would be a good venue for us to ask about. But it's attached to, if I remember correctly, it's attached to Strawberry Square. It's like a big, little, hidden away mall kind of thing, / big food court that really is it's a central place for a lot of the state workers in Harrisburg.
Right.
Which is also attached to the Harrisburg Hilton, which does have meeting rooms, but the last time I looked at them years ago, they were kind of pricey.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about maybe wandering over there and talking to them.
Mm-hmm. Understood.
But, yeah, that's kind of it. If we get the right amount of money where we could do something like a storefront rental for 30 days or 3 months, I would be more than happy to throw the event as a large 3-day thing and then a bunch of other separate like mini events in between and use that for other stuff.
Understood.
That would be awesome. I mean, I wouldn't mind if a bunch of F&E guys decided they wanted to have a week of massive F&E play. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
Oh, agreed.
That's just me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, understood. And most of the venues that we've had is actually we've been able to leave our stuff there, except for I think the Moose Lodge, for the most part, and not people not bothering it. And that'd be great for F&E.
Yeah. Closest we had to anybody bothering our stuff was one time out in Grantville. Remember when we had one of the local shops that runs Magic the Gathering stuff did their opening night, or their some kind of release night.
Mm-hmm.
They did that on our event, and because of the extra merchandise and stuff that they were bringing in, I stayed overnight in the room just to watch it, and hotel staff, without asking me, opened the door to let somebody in to get their bag. Otherwise, that's literally the closest we've had to any kind of incident like that. But, yeah, every place we've been, we've been able to leave our stuff in there, leave it set up.
Mm-hmm.
Which a tremendously huge, huge, nice thing. And if we did a storefront type of setup, that would be on steroids, because then pretty much the only person coming in is going to be, staff like me.
Mm-hmm.
And our, attendees the next day. So, yeah. And that's a huge thing when you're talking about, you guys want to run a Twilight Imperium game, they can come in and set it up the night before and have it ready to go at 10 o'clock the next morning for their 8 to 10 hours of
game
time.
Damn.
If you really want to get nostalgic about it, if, any of our board gamers, any grognards who love war games, wanted to come in and run, the old terrible Swift Sword system, to run, the Battle of Gettysburg, that's a regimental-level game that could be played. If you have it down pat, you're playing it in real time.
Right.
And it can take literally all 3 days to run the 3 days of Gettysburg, for instance. No.
Wow.
But, we could do events like that. And, you want to come in and run a captain's tournament? Yes, we could do that. We have the space and the time. You want to come in and run a campaign where, maybe you use a small F&E section to generate scenarios, like we talked about as a possibility before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can leave that stuff set up and over 3 days. And if we get a storefront space, that might be something that we could set up and do over the course of a weekend or two.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Yeah.
That's kind of all I got. I'm just kind of rambling at this point.
Yeah, agreed. I was just thinking about the first one that you did, at least the first one I came to, and I remember I just got my iPhone, and I was trying to get to the place, and unfortunately, this was before the phones had GPS built into them, so I got to had directions, but the directions were say, oh, go the turn right on this street, turn left on this street, and so forth. And I still remember missing the street because the street sign was missing. I was looking at the map and went, that was the road.
So did I have to talk to you in on that one, I think? Talk directions.
I don't remember.
That was Lakeside Lutheran Church.
Oh,
that was the very first one I think.
Okay. That may have not been the first one. Because I could have sworn... I thought it was...
Are you thinking maybe the Creekside Air Company?
Yes. I think that was the one. Because it was a fire company. That I remember. It wasn't the one that was actually in Harrisburg. Where I had to go through Harrisburg to get to the church.
Yeah, it was over in the Camp Hill area.
Right.
On the West Shore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, because I remember we did Lakeside Lutheran in Harrisburg, then we went over to the West Shore for that one at that firehouse, and then I think our next one after that may have been the Pembroke Community Center before we moved into the Moose Lodge for several years. Yeah. And once we got in, like, that, and that's kind of an interesting thing. Once we've gotten into some of the places, it's been like, as long as they weren't, like, horribly priced and pricing us out, we were like, we were there for years.
Yeah, yeah. I still remember the one in Maryville where they got kind of, they were got teed off. Because of...
Well, yeah, they pissed off our people for, on a different level.
Right, right. Well, they expected us to purchase, buy a lot more stuff, you know, food at the actual Moose Lodge. You know?
Yeah, but they were very inconsistent with their quality, too.
Right. So how can you expect us to want to buy your food if it's inconsistent?
Yeah. Oh, that there was that, and then there was the whole... The weekend of like Arctic time, and they froze us.
Oh yeah.
And
oh jeez.
Said, oh yeah, the heater ran out of oil or something like that, and this one vent was turned on, and that's why it was running all the time. And yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it was. Other than those two little issues.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Agreed. You know, for most part, we haven't really had that much issues with any of the venues that we've gotten over the years. You know, at least
yeah, well,
that would affect the convention.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that annoyed people the most was no outside food or drink at the Moose Lodge.
Right.
And other than that, you know, it's been a pretty smooth sailing thing.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Like,
I agree.
You wouldn't believe the number that tried to get like somebody to come in and do catering. So, but then again, you know, I mean, we're a small event, and until people come in and actually see what we're doing, a lot of people just don't kind of get it.
Right.
And that's kind of the thing when I've approached a lot of these places. Most of them just. Don't get it. It's kind of rare that they do. Wyndham Gardens got it. We were there for several years before they renovated their space.
Right.
That's kind of like our big thing. Like, if they went back to having a ballroom, I'd go there in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, they would probably have tripled their prices by now.
Of course. Oh, geez. These days, it's nuts. I was just announcing. As part of the news portion, that the, you know, the 1-inch counters from the Mega Hex of H1 module?
Well, that post. I saw Gene posted about that.
Yeah. They tripled the cost. Yeah. And it's like, this is nuts. You know, and they said, okay, that's it. You know, they were able to absorb the cost last year, but this year's like, no, they can't. So they said, okay, that's it.
But they're still publishing.
Yeah. Oh, they're still selling it. It's just they're not selling it out of game stores anymore because they can't. Because the game stores are going to want a certain cut, which is their right to. So the only way to do that would actually be increase the cost. You know, increase the sale price. That'd be the only way.
Yeah.
So instead of raising the price, they decided to basically say, okay, you're just going to have to buy them directly from us. You know, I'm assuming that they don't sell that many to the game stores as it stands.
Which is not too horrible of a thing in some respect.
Agreed.
But it does hurt the game stores a bit.
Oh, agreed. And
one more thing.
And yeah, one more thing that we can't buy from them because you know, I'm sure everyone who wants game stores to survive will do their best to support their local game store, whether that means buying, you know, just buying paints, you know, because you know some paints because you need it to do your to paint your miniatures, even if you don't do Warhammer 2K or 4K, whatever, or you know, buy cards or buy dice or whatever it takes, just a little something to keep them going, you know. So, you know, we all want to support our local game stores because we want them to survive. Because we know us, you know, us gamers as an overall demographic are heck of a lot smaller than most of those people, most of the people out there. But as I've said multiple times on this podcast, I am very happy and very encouraged by my daughter, because my daughter likes to play games and likes to play games with her friends. So, you know, and this is actually, you know, when she was going to college, when she would get together with her college buddies, and they would play these different games, you know, face to face. You know, these days most of her friends are online, so, you know, they play online games because that's all they can do when it comes to sharing, playing games together. But you know, she's the kind of person that really gives me hope that the game industry will continue on.
I think it will. It's very much a it's a social thing,
mm-hmm.
And I think we're going through some like significant changes in how we can do stuff. I mean, we are I think we're on the cusp of a huge, huge change right now in how things are done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to be a matter of time before somebody comes out. If they haven't already done it, I could be totally, you know, off the mark here, but I think it's just a matter of time before somebody comes out and says, okay, here's the package, here's the, not just the PDF file of rules, here's right. The printer package, and you just print your own game out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The question...
when it comes right to it, you know, events like Gamers of Summer, Gamers of Winter, the Harrisburg Board Game Day, you know, they fill a niche where people can get face-to-face time with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I saw that was really interesting as a change in how game shops worked over the decades was a lot of the ones that survived for the longest time, they shifted from being a traditional brick-and-mortar store with, here's our stuff on the shelf, you can buy it or not, have a nice day, to, here's our stuff on the shelf, here's our table space, where you can sit down and play a game here for 3 or 4 hours tonight,
mm-hmm.
after work with your friends. And, you know, like, that game place on the West Shore was a really good example of that. They supported us for years. And Charlie only went out of business because of a whole bunch of things that all hit at one time. Not because of his business model. His business model was sound.
Right.
And it was, he had, you know, 5 or 6 tables any given night. People coming in, paying a few bucks for the tables. They'd buy, you know, sodas, snacks, whatever. And, you know, he turned it into a little social meeting place,
mm-hmm.
to do these things. And prior to that, because the prior owner was doing that in a smaller space with fewer tables before he sold the business to Charlie. And he had adapted into doing that because it helped him generate sales and so on. And the need and ability that people have of wanting to just get out of the frickin' house, apartment, and barracks, whatever, and go meet other people and do stuff. It really does override a lot, and I think it's going to override a lot of the online connectivity. Because the online connectivity is here to stay.
But oh, agreed.
It's kind of a poor substitute for actually being with other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion on it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a court thing, in which case I'm okay with the Zoom meeting.
There have been enough courts.
Well, yes, I was. Yes, Your Honor, I honestly was feuding or whatever. Thank you. Have a nice day. No fuss, no muss.
Understood, understood. Gary, you've been quiet.
Well, I'm just waiting until you guys are finished your conversation. I was actually on the BBS. There was somebody who just recently posted a question about fast cruisers. And he was basically just trying to suggest like a pound for a pound, or I suppose
right.
BPV for BPV, but if you could put it in another way.
Yeah.
Whether it's an SFP or Fed and Empire or so forth, or FedCom as well, or Call to Arms too. How would you rate the various fast ships in terms of the niches that they fill and the roles that they can take on? And even, like, I guess because that varies depending on the game system you're in. But, I do think that, because they're not quite as all-around dangerous as X ships, and, of course, they're not quite as balanced as non-X, non-fast ships. In some game systems, you get the sense of what they can do more than others. Like in F&E, for example, they have an actual difference in terms of how they move operationally on the board compared to
right.
Other types of units. So whether it's to use them as fast rate or to use them as fast responders or to do something else with them entirely, I was just wondering if that might be an interesting topic to bore over.
Yes and no. I think yes. The big issue, obviously, is that I'm not familiar with all of the fast cruisers, so it's hard for me to compare them with each other. But the whole concept of the fast cruiser, I say a few. Possible missions for it, one is obviously a fast responder, as you pointed out. Also, a way of doing intel, use a fast cruiser to quickly penetrate, the enemy lines, do some quick looking around, and then get the heck out of Dodge, versus, the whole sneak approach. Where you're trying to try to get past the border, and then investigate and then come back out, basically slowly, so you just look like, everyday all the other rest of the traffic that's around the border,
Well, right now there's about in the Alpha Octant, there's about three different classes of fast ship that are fairly well covered, and then there's one or two that have only been given previews so far. The main well-known ones are, of course, the fast heavy cruisers, and the fast, there's also more recently the war cruisers.
Right.
So most empires have at least one of each. The Federation actually have a few different ones, because they have the new fast cruiser, the Manta Ray. And they also have a couple of, I think it's a carrier variant of their fast cruiser as well. And the main rule of thumb is that for most empires, if the original ship has four heavy weapons, like photon torpedoes or disruptors,
right.
then the fast cruiser will turn two of those into phaser ones. So it has typically the same amount of weapon boxes, but it lacks the same heavy hitting punch. Because they tend to have maybe 36 warp instead of 30 warp, so not as much as an X cruiser,
right.
but significantly more than your average regular ship, I should say. And of course, in terms of the shapeways miniatures, the Federation ones have those big pointy spade saucers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've got particularly the Mongoose style Romulans look really great, because the Mongoose style, like Firehawk and Sparrowhawk, have a very distinct style, like where the lower engines are kind of out, compared to being kind of stuck on tape with the classic Sparrowhawk and Firehawk.
Right.
And so the on the regular ones, the wings are swept forward. And so with the fast versions, they sweep the wings back, and then they extend the prow to give it more of a kind of a sleek and dynamic look. You can actually see them on Shapeways if you want to check them out. But then on the other hand, actually speaking of the plasma ones, they tend to, I think they get a slightly better deal because, like, for example, the standard Firehawk has two plasma S and two plasma F, and the fast version keeps the two plasma S. And it only turns the two plasma Fs at this phase of one. So you're actually getting more like two-thirds of the fire, the heavy weapon firepower.
That's true.
Half.
That's
and
true.
Because it's got the cloaking device, it's a much better rating ship compared to
yeah, but
you know,
the,
other empires. But,
yeah. Oh, but at the same time, Gary, the big issue with plasma ships is the third turn, three turns of army. And the benefit of having four torpedoes is that you can, especially with pseudos, you can have it so that you can launch like an F with an S that's a pseudo, and the person is gonna run. But also, if you want to, you have the ability to hold back the Fs, you know, for at the very least a defensive weapons, so that you know if they. You know, if you're trying to reload the S's, the F's are there as protection because if you're running away and your opponent is coming in on you, you can launch the F's, assuming that they're in arc. I understand that issue. The F's and have it so that you can at least slow them down or possibly cause them to turn off. You know, that's the benefit of having the four compared to, say, a photon based ship, you know, like the feds, they're fast cruiser where they have not changed. The only thing that they changed, obviously, is going to be the firepower, the amount of damage they can actually do. That's true. But at the same time, they have they still have the ability, because most of the time when you're charging your photons, you're charging them, you know, every other turn, they're ready. You know, obviously, there is the whole issue with power, big surprise. And so if in some cases they might, you know, not charge, you know, might have offset them a little bit to save on power. But you know, that's always an option. But at the very least you can charge the photons and have them at least ready to fire every two turns versus, you know, if you have two S's and no F's, then it makes things even more difficult because you only can have enough firepower to hold back your opponent, is every three turns or you know, because and there's going to be one turn that you're most probably will not going to be able to have any plasma available though. Yes, in theory, if you want to, you can do a fast load F, but you know that there goes your S torpedo down the tubes if you use a fast load F. That's one thing I don't know about, which is the battery situation when it comes to fast cruisers either. So, whether they have additional batteries.
Well,
yes.
Well, if you see, part of the thing as well is what mission are you sending the fast ship on? Because if you've got the Romulan fast cruiser, you're not necessarily sitting around waiting for a duel. You're intercepting someone else's raider, either to defeat it or to hold it up in place long enough so that reinforcements can come to the scene. Or you're maybe attacking a convoy, or you're raiding the planet's surface and something. So, is those two S-torps that you've got on there, are you using them to bombard a planetary surface, or are you using them to try and assassinate a key target ship or something? And either way, are you sticking around long enough so that you have to cloak for three turns? And although I guess your ship would be a bit faster while you're under cloak, so there'd be a little bit of a difference there in terms of where you're distributing your power. So you wouldn't necessarily approach the battle the same way that you would with a standard Firehawk.
Oh, agreed. And the thing is, when it comes to the Firehawk and ramen chips in general, you don't always want to use your cloaking because the issue with cloaking is that you give up the initiative, because when you're cloaking, you got to slow down because cloaking devices are not cheap when it comes to power. You know, so, and normally you want to cloak as a defensive measure. You know, you're not able to get the distance that you want to have, but even, you know, as a defensive measure, okay, you basically slow down, so the person's going to have the ability to overrun you. Make it harder for them to hit you. Yeah, that's the whole idea of a cloak. But with that, the difficulty part, of course, is going to be uncloaking. Who said that? Or was that in the tactics manual? I think it might be in the tactics manual. That you need to, when you're about to cloak, you need to know what is your plan for uncloaking? What is your plan to get yourself out of the situation without getting yourself killed? Because remember that there's, you know, it takes like 5 impulses to uncloak a Romulan ship. And if you have the enemy ship really close, they can beat the snot out of you before you even have a chance to fire. Because it's not like you don't have active fire control. You're blind. You can't even launch on passive fire control. You know, so.
But yeah. So and then of course, the other types of fast ships out there would be light dreadnoughts. Now those tend to be a little bit more generous weapon-wise. So,
right.
For example, the Federation run the Splendid Cats. They have a move cost of 1.25 in both Fed Commander and FFE, and they basically usually have 5 photons instead of 6, which is still not bad. I mean, it can do quite a powerful. You can score a powerful hit with that. So it's generally. You know, for their size, they can be quite dangerous. But of course, it's worth remembering that the Thalsorian light dreadnought is not an actual light dreadnought. It's just a big command ship with 3 guns.
Right.
So it shouldn't get to play with the other quote unquote light dreadnoughts in terms of being fast raiders. So, and then similarly, there's a preview because I think they want to try to save the full set for like a future R module,
mm-hmm.
R13 maybe. But there are light battleships. So there's a couple of ones that have been previewed in different captain's log issues. So, for example, there's actually 2 different types of ISC light battleship. And 2 of them have, I want to say, 4 PPDs. One of them has 4 PPDs and a couple of plasma S's. And then the other one has only the 2 central PPDs, and the other PPDs are swapped for plasma S's. Because the idea is that one of them is basically if you're actually using it as a big light raider, a big fast raider. And the other one is basically if you're using it to lead a fast echelon. Like, say, if you've got enough fast ships to basically turn it into a squadron in and of itself,
mm-hmm.
then you're basically, if you're sending the entire squadron to, you know, like during the pacification, for example, then you'd basically use the light battleship as like a squadron flagship, basically. So, Captain Lug 50, I think, came with the torpedo variant. And then the original one was in a supplemental file a few issues before. I forget which one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, but I think some of the more obvious ones, like the Federation light battleship, I think we're probably not going to see that until whichever module R13 or whatever that they're put in. And of course, there's a couple of odd cases. Like, for example, there is a fast variant of the Federation destroyer, the USS Two Moons, and it basically is just has 2 photons and a single one of the engines that you've got 2 of on the regular fast cruiser. But it was kind of like a historical anomaly, so It doesn't really warrant a full range of fast destroyers because, generally speaking, they're too small a class. And also because the Fed destroyer is kind of a weird case in the first place because of how many photons it would ordinarily have. So most destroyers don't have that many heavy weapons to lose to justify the fast status. So like a light cruiser or war cruiser is like the smallest thing you can get away with and classify, if that makes sense.
Understood. Yeah, actually, that's one thing. Maybe you know, Gary, because I don't, but it's a question that pops in my head, which is the light dreadnoughts. Was this actually a historical ship, or was it just one of those things that they thought about, but they never actually put into production? Do you know?
Oh, they tend to be real. Like a couple of empires only built one. I think the Romulans only built one strike. But the Feds built a few different standard cats, and I think at least one of them survived the General War. One of those was it basically went on a kind of like a you're not coming back mission to try to attack a key Klingon supply base during the early part of the General War, just to kind of like stop the Klingons from moving too far into Federation space.
Right.
And others have had other kind of fates or whatever. But the IFC had a few. They used them during the classification. So, but theirs were historically relatively late to be built because there's a number of different classes that they historically only really got around to building in the run-up to the classification because they didn't really need to build them during the General War proper.
Mm-hmm.
Although I suppose if you're playing, a lot of those ships still have, like, you know how... sometimes on an FSD, you'll see the kind of like the little kind of symbol. It's like two dashes and a line going through them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that refers to the earliest the ship could be built. So, say for example, if you're playing in one of the Caribbean timelines, the Module C6, then the IFC wouldn't have an excuse to hold off then. So, in those timelines, you'd probably see the light dreadnoughts a lot quicker because they're building them to fight Caribbean light dreadnoughts and Romulan ships as well. So, they can't really hold back the way that they did historically.
Understood.
But actually, one of the things I was thinking about was because the original poster was asking like which was the best, I guess pound for pound or you know BTV wise. But I was actually thinking that if you're thinking in terms of using the fast ship to go on raids, then you might be thinking, okay, so what are the capabilities that the ship should have in order to do that?
Right.
And for that, I actually think the Paravian one has an advantage, the one from Module C6, because it can land on planets. And it still has the 20 boarding parties that the standard Paravian heavy cruiser has. So if your goal is to get to a corner ISC colony, land troops, cause trouble, and then skedaddle, then you can do that to a way that a lot of other empires would have to use their transporters and their shuttles to get down to the surface. So you've got a bit more flexibility in terms of what you do when you arrive at the place that you're raiding. And also, I think we were talking with Barry before about the quantum wave torpedo. That weapon requires warp power to overload. And most Caribbean ships don't have auxiliary warp reactors, so
right.
You have to pay for that warp power from the warp engines. So you're slowing your ship more. But when you have a fast cruiser, you actually have one thing that's a relative novelty for Caribbean ships, and that's
right.
Discretionary warp.
Right.
So you've got 36 warp. You can use 4 of that warp to overload your quantums, and then everything else goes to all the other systems that you're using on your ship. So you've got a higher battle speed, and you're able to hold on to a stronger punch while you're running, if that makes sense. And also because you can fire them every turn, so you don't have to worry the same way that you would with, like, a Romulan, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And their light dreadnought has five quantum wave torpedoes, the same way that like a Fed ship has five photons. So that's another ship. But proportionally speaking, you're not losing much based on the regular Parathian dreadnought, and you've got a lot more flexibility in terms of the battle speed that you're keeping while you know considering overloads. So that's another ship that's and also it's not that expensive because the Parathian ships are relatively cheap PV wise because they don't get much in the way of refits. So if you're thinking about, like, it might not be the most powerful ship of its type, but in terms of the price you're paying for it, are you getting what you pay for, if that makes sense?
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah, that's true. The poster says pound for pound, doesn't explicitly mention, you know, BPV or anything like that, but I think I tend to agree with your statement, basically, that it's how much firepower per BPV are you getting? You know.
Actually, do you still have the PDF for the Module C6 SSD book on your computer?
I'll check.
Because if you do, you could also check out the Carnivon Fast Cruiser, because that's another ship that has heavy weapons that require warp power to overload. And that's another Empire that doesn't get AWRs ordinarily. So you could run your disruptor cannons hot every second turn, and you'd still have a fair bit of flexibility in terms of how you're firing them.
Oh, which ship? Okay, I brought it up. Which ship am I looking for?
So, I guess you could do a comparison. There's the Paravians have both a... Actually, the Paravians have three... both Empires, I should say, have three fast ships in Module C6. They each have a light dreadnought, they have a fast cruiser, and they have a fast war cruiser.
Okay, give me a sec. Strike cruiser. Fast cruiser, there it is. Okay, this is the Carnivons. Trying to find. There it is. Okay.
The only thing about the Carnivon one is that it can't land on planets, and it doesn't have as many boarding parties. So it's probably not quite as flexible as a Raider compared to the Brazilian one. But it might be a better unit in terms of trying to assassinate a particular target ship or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you want to try to intercept a convoy or raid a mobile base or something.
Yeah, I got the two bolts, two hill nippers, and two disruptor cannons. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So that's 18 plus 18 is 36 plus 3 is 39. Any other power other than batteries? 39, 43 total power. That's a good bit of power. Okay, yeah, the disruptor cannons are like the regular disruptors when it comes to charging them.
They're two-turn arming weapons. But they do, on average, the standard shot is twice as powerful as a regular disruptor bolt, but the overload shot is only 50% as powerful again.
Mm-hmm. I see.
They actually have the same disruptive effect against Andromeda and PA panels that standard disruptor bolts have.
And you have to remind me of that. tells me it was better that they died like the dogs they are.
Aw. From a bone.
Oh. Okay, where is it? Where is it? I'm looking for the Punavon Fast Cruiser. Uh-oh. What is it, you little numbnut? Yes, you. I got my kit.
Now, the only thing is that the Carnivon light dreadnought, it doesn't have five disruptor cannons because of the way the engineering is on the ship. It only has four.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have other weapons to try to make up for it, though. So I guess you'd have to be a little bit more careful in terms of how you line up your shots. Like, if you want to have, like, one big blow rather than, you know, taking your time. But then if you're on a fast ship, you're probably not want to take your time too long, because I think in the universe, the engines wear out more quickly. So they're more of a hassle in terms of keeping in service.
Right, right. Let's look at the... Because this is... What, this, no. Wow, one... Oh, okay, I forgot about the center warp. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So it's 24 between those two. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So another 12. So it's total 36. There's 7, 38. 38 plus 6 is 44. Wow. For how small of a ship that the Paravian fast cruiser is, because I'm looking at the number of boxes, and it's like, this just looks so small. Because you have what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You got 12 whole boxes, and that's it. Of course, you got the 5 shuttle.
What?
2 transporters. You got a good number of phasers. You got 8 phasers, phaser ones, that is, 4 phaser threes, and you got the 2 quantum wave torpedoes. Boarding party's got 20 of them. It's not bad there.
See, one of the main reasons why trading ships are smaller than average is because they need to retain the ability to land all times. So, I think that's one of the reasons why there's certain kind of engineering compromises that are involved. Like, for example, if you look at some of the, in Prime Directive, there's some of the, what do you call them, deck plans?
Yeah.
And there's a handful of the deck plans for ships that can land. And so they need to actually find space in the hull for the landing pads.
Right.
So, and also, I guess, you have to design the hull in such a way that they can actually fly through an atmosphere, you know, without being too blocky a ship or whatever, and then you're getting back out again. So for those reasons, that's why the even though if you look on Shapeways, the Paravian cruisers have quite a wide wingspan, I think it's the overall volume is a bit lower compared to what you'd have on the equivalent Gorn ship, because Gorns, they don't design their cruisers to, they design their cruisers to stay in open space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Gorn cruisers are overall seem to be larger than most. Okay. Crap. What did he do? What did he do?
Overall point value with the IFC fast cruiser is probably the most expensive one. It gets all the
three guys are still there.
That you usually see on the IFC ship.
There.
Yeah, still here.
Things still going. Things still going. Okay. Can you hear me, guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Gary? Doug?
Yeah.
Grandpola. Whatever. I've got to end it here. So we'll just end it here because I said I'm not gonna futz with it. I'll work on it after the show's ended. Yeah, I know. It's just the way I have things all routed and so forth on my machine. Okay, well, I think I'll end it. Let's just stop this whole craziness. Oh, okay. We'll do Doug. So, unfortunately, I can't hear you guys, and it's gonna. I don't know what I'm gonna do about the recording, because if it's just my headphones, I'm not sure what you guys are saying, and I'm probably talking over you, so it makes no sense. I might just clip the whole thing out. So, anyhow, I had a nice little discussion about the good old days of. Okay, let me just do this. Go like this. Okay, so don't have to worry about that anymore. So, and I talk about the good old days of gamers. That fun discussing fast cruisers and of course the lovely Pravians and the Carnivans and their beautiful fast cruisers. So with that, before I send off. There will be no podcast next week. I'm going to be out of town, so I won't be able to do the podcast. So that's just a warning ahead of time. So guys who are in the chat room, take the night off. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.